We are back once again as we close in on number 200. We are at, this is installment 189. 189th installment of the Parish of the Patriots. When I saw that, when I had that jotted down, I thought, this is amazing. We're so close. We're so close to episode 200. I feel like I should do something special for episode 200. But I probably won't. Why? Because every installment of the Parish of the Patriots, every installment of this show is special, if I do say so. If I do say so myself. Regardless, I'm glad you're here. However you found us, whether you're a first-time listener, long-time member of the congregation, it is great to be together, once again. And as always, this is all the content there is for the show. There's no better part behind a paywall. So if you think this isn't up to snuff, I'm sorry. That's as good as it gets. What we do is pass the plate around. Don't be shy. Pay those tithes. It is very much appreciated. And it's so easy. Just go down to the bottom of the description page here on Radio Albion, where this show is, and you will find that we got snail mail. We got Bitcoin address down there. Got a Monero address. Got email for your notes. If you got a different cryptocurrency, drop me a note for that. I'll take it. I have no pride. I'll take your Doge. Whatever. I don't know. It'd be appreciated all the same. And like I say, it is. It's super easy. Anyone can do it, kids. Anyone can do it. Doesn't get any easier than dropping a note in the mailbox. Hey, with that having been said, let's go ahead and hit that listener supporter mailbag. GPD, thanks again for all your hard work, and I hope this helps. This is from Drew, and yes, I do appreciate there's more there, but I've already, we've already conversed about that, so I do appreciate it, Drew, very much. Mr. T, GPD, greetings from Clown World, and Clown World is just getting more clownish. Yeah, World War. And, you know, people are talking a lot about World War III. We're going to kind of get into it a little bit. We can't help but get into it a little bit on this show. But maybe it needs to be called World War Clown. I'm not sure. Not sure if you could find a more historically ridiculous chain of events leading us towards conflict. Grandpa, glad to hear you're recovering. Thanks for the great shows. And that's from Andy. And thank you for listening, and thank you for your kind words. And yes, I am. I'm definitely on the mend. I'm getting around. I'm getting around better and faster than I ever thought I would. And I'm grateful that hopefully I don't overdo it, which is what I have a tendency to do, and screw something up. I don't think so. I think I'm pretty much, rocking and rolling here, aside from all the usual wear and tear of old age, shoulders, backs, knees, all that stuff giving out. It's just life. I told somebody here a while back, I'm like, look, somebody that was younger, I'm like, look, the old age toll, you're going to pay it. You think you're not. You think you can keep yourself physically fit and eat healthy, and all those things are great. You need to do that. That's true. But trust me, you will pay the toll for old age. And the bill comes a lot sooner, Like you buy, they used to have these deals. I don't think they have any of it going on now, but they used to have these deals, like buy this new car and your first payment won't be due until, next year or some ridiculous crap. And you're thinking, man, it's like I got a free car. And then like the next day, a year's gone by and bills due. that's how it is. You're a young guy and you're thinking everything good. But then you just wake up and all of a sudden it's like, where did that go? And now the old age bill is due, and your back gives you problems, your knees give you problems, all the rest of it. Hey, it's just part of, it just builds character. It's character development. This is you getting your character development. Every day of your life is a character development episode of your life. So yeah, live it up. Enjoy it. I'm recording the show on Saturday, and we just had to, there'd probably be more stuff come out between now and when the show airs. I apologize for that, but I can't not mention it at the same time. So just realize I'm recording this on Saturday morning. We had this whole explosion on this Crimea bridge that connects Crimea with Russia. This escalation of this conflict. Now, as all of you know, because if you listen to this show, you're well informed. All of you know that after the 2014 coup, Crimea didn't want no part of that, and they voted to be a part of Russia. And of course, Russia's always had their naval base there. So it wasn't real surprising, that turn of events. But, you know, the U.S. and their sock puppets all try to act like that is somehow illegitimate. You know, they tried to tell everybody, like, they tried to make it like Russian soldiers were out there holding. They did. I saw news stories. I remember at the time seeing news stories that were literally claiming that Russian soldiers were out there pointing their guns at people, making them vote to join Russia. And you know it's bullshit. Well, of course, you know it's bullshit because it comes from the U.S. and it comes from the U.S. media. But you also know it's bullshit on a fundamental practical level. Why? Because there's been no guerrilla warfare. If their narrative was true, which it obviously is not, but is it just is a matter of proving it? If their narrative was true that none of these referendums, you know, it's the same thing with these with the Donbass and these eastern regions that just voted to join Russia. They're saying these are sham referendums. The people didn't really want this. But if that were true, the people would be committing guerrilla warfare against the Russian soldiers. If the people just desperately wanted to stay a part of the Ukraine puppet regime that has been trying to kill them for the last 8 years, then they would be doing like acts of terrorism and sabotage and trying to drive out, not really acts of terrorism, it would be acts of sabotage and guerrilla warfare against the Russian troops. But they're not doing that, are they? That 8 years is, and Crimea hasn't, they haven't, Russia hasn't had a problem with Crimeans attacking Russian soldiers or Russian military vehicles and doing like an underground operation. They haven't had any problem with that. So that tells you right now, of course, these people wanted to be a part of Russia. So what is the narrative? Well, that doesn't matter. The narrative from the U.S. and the West and their sock puppets is that doesn't matter whether those people want to be a part of Russia or not. It doesn't matter. They've got to be a part of the Ukraine puppet coup regime, whether they like it or not. This is, we're supposed to ignore the fact that basically they've been trying to ethnic cleanse those eastern regions for 8 years now. They've been trying to drive them out. They've been trying to kill them all. It's literally an ethnic cleansing supported and funded by the U.S. We're supposed to ignore that. They're just not supposed to care about that. I don't know. You know, we're just supposed to sit around and listen to yet another lecture about our democracy and our values and our rules-based order or whatever the hell else, while they contradict themselves and all of their policies and everything that they push and try to do. Now, I don't know. There's been criticism, and rightfully so, I think, about the way Russia has performed, has done on this special military operation, their strategy, I guess what I'm trying to spit out and say. And I mean, there's one instance where I was wrong. When this kicked off back in February, I said, this will last like 2 weeks, you know, because I fully expected like Russia to go in all shock and awe, you know, just basically roll through this shithole. A lot of people did. And here we are 7 months later, and they're still dicking around with it. It's beyond frustrating because it doesn't matter what the U.S. does. Well, Russia turns around and goes and makes another protest at the United Nations. You know, 7 months on. I mean, you say what you want, but we're 7 months on to this thing, and they're still messing around with it. Some of the voices that are critical of this are critical because they're saying this is encouraging and is going to lead to a broader and wider war, probably World War Clown. And yes, I'm going to take over. I'm taking that over now. Thank you, Mr. T. I'm taking over that term, World War Clown. This is going to lead to World War Clown because Russia insisting on doing this limited military operation has done nothing but encourage the U.S. that they're basically a bunch of punks and they're not going to do anything. And it has. It has emboldened the U.S. to get more and more aggressive, funnel more and more weapons, be more and more ridiculous. This idea that you're funneling people, and they are funneling people. You're funneling people, weapons, money to your enemies so they can kill your dudes, and then trying to stand there and do some weaselly lawyer speak about we're technically not a part of the conflict. I mean, come on. And then Russia goes and makes another whining appeal to the UN. I can understand that criticism, and it's a valid criticism that because they didn't go shock and awe into the Ukraine, that this has just made it's just going to make it escalate more. We had them blow up the Nord Stream pipelines. The U.S. blew up the Nord Stream pipelines. I say that everybody on the planet knows the U.S. blew up the Nord Stream pipelines. And now, here we are, just a short time later, and we've got this blowing up of this highly important bridge. It's definitely an escalation. I don't care how you label it. It's definitely an escalation. Whether how the bridge is blown up is really irrelevant. Whether it was indeed a truck bomb, and like I say, this is early on with the event because I'm recording on Saturday, whether it was indeed a truck bomb, or whether it's more like explosive planted by the U.S. or whoever on the bridge. I just find it hard to believe that a truck full of explosives somehow managed to roll right up in there and nobody noticed. But nonetheless, regardless of that, it's definitely, unarguably, an escalation. So the argument that their limited, their crappy strategy of doing this limited special military operation and trying to jump through all these legal loopholes for the international community has been a flawed strategy, is leading, I guess is what I want to say, is leading to more escalation. I don't think you can argue against that. Now, the one point I think does bear keeping in mind is, what if that's their intention? Look, any major nation, and light or not, Russia's a major nation, they've wargamed before they ever committed the first, before they rolled the first troop or first tank or sent the first troop that direction, they wargamed this stuff to death. I mean, they have entire plans on top of plans on top of plans on top of plans. Okay, if this happens, then what do we do? Okay, but if this happened, then what do we do? And so on and so forth. This stuff has been wargamed to death. So that brings up the question of, if obviously their limited strategy is leading to a greater escalation in the conflict and possibly going to lead to World War Clown, which would be a direct confrontation between NATO and Russia. I mean, how has that escaped their wargaming plan? So in other words, maybe it's a feature, not a bug. Out of all the people, out of people complaining and pointing out and saying that, you know, this is, their flawed strategy is leading to greater escalation. Well, you've got this situation. I mean, if you've decided, how do I want to put this? If Russia went in and would have just blitzkrieged Ukraine from the beginning, which they could have done, if they'd have gone in there and just basically stepped on Ukraine and squished it like a bug, you know, the Kiev regime would have fled to Tel Aviv or wherever the hell else with their bags full of money, and that would have been that. Well, yeah, that would have solved the issue with the Ukraine, but the fundamental problem of where that came from, which is the U.S. and NATO, would still be there. You would still be dealing with that shit. They'd just start the next thing. You just start the next thing in the next country. We've already kind of seen that with them jumping up in what? Now Finland and such, or they're going to join NATO too. You see, they're just going to keep it up. They could have blitzkrieged the Ukraine, but then the fundamental underlying issue is the U.S. Now, I'm telling y'all straight up, I'm just talking out my ass. I don't have any insider information, but this is things I think about. If you're Russia, and you decided that, no, we're not going to just simply deal with this issue. We're going to deal with the underlying problem. And now is as good a time as can be had, as if there could be a good time, to, if we're going to fight a war with NATO and the U.S., which it's one and the same, then we're better off doing it now than later. If you've made that decision and you've made that commitment that we're better off fighting this, that you're better off fighting this war now than later. A strategy where you draw them in and they deplete their own weapons supplies, funneling it into the Ukraine where you're mostly just blowing it up. That's not a bad strategy. This makes sense if their strategy from the beginning was for the conflict to escalate. They've already committed. I said last week that, you know, talking about Putin's speech, he's getting his people ready. He's getting them ready for war. I was reading someone saying this morning, you know, the Russian people are getting angry because you had to blow up the pipelines. You got all this crap they're doing. And now this bridge thing. And it seems like the Kremlin isn't doing anything. See, that is rallying. That is working in their favor because it's rallying the people behind the cause. It's getting the people ready for war. And I don't think it's going to be just for a war with the Ukraine. I mean, you think about it. Like I said, if you've decided that ultimately you're going to fight, you're going to go ahead and just fight World War Clown with the U.S. NATO now, because you're going to have to do it at some point in time anyway, now is the time. And according to your wargaming, it can be done and you can win. Like I said, there's a lot worse strategy than starting off with the UK and the US and all the the US and all their sock puppets, you know, depleting their own military supplies before the conflict begins. I mean, that would be pretty smart, wouldn't it? You've got the UK and even the Pentagon starting to whine that they've sent so much weaponry and ammunition and crap to the Ukraine that now they're running out. I mean, that makes sense, doesn't it? If you were going to go ahead and you've committed yourself and say, well, the way we're going to deal with this is just go ahead and fight these people, then before you actually undertake that, getting them to go ahead and use up all of their shit first, that's a pretty sound strategy, doesn't it? It makes more sense to me than just, and like I say, I don't know. But to me, that makes more sense than they just went into this special military operation, you know, completely naive and blind that NATO was going to escalate like this. Again, they war game these things to death. They've been strategized and planned. They've had years to work this out. It's hard to believe, oh, they never predicted that the U.S. NATO would do this sort of thing. I find that hard to believe. The idea that maybe they knew it and this is all part of the plan, that kind of makes sense to me. And as they deplete these supplies, once World War Clown, if this theory holds true and World War Clown does go ahead and break out, I mean, how many parts come from China? And you know China ain't going to send nothing. China, because, you know, with China, there's the question of, is China prepared to open another front against US/NATO? It's possible, but the second front could just simply be to cut off everything, just to basically cut off the resupply. Imagine that. I don't know. I guess we're just, as is always the case, we're just along for the ride. We're going to see how it all turns out. And like I say, there's probably going to be new developments between now and when the show airs. I apologize for that. But like I say, it's Saturday. That is a big happening as of this morning. So I felt like I did need to mention it. But yeah, we're on the fast track, when the bullet train to World War Clown. But anyway, I don't want to just spend all my time because we basically had this discussion last week, aside from obviously this new development this week. And I don't want to drone on about it any more than y'all probably want to hear it, you know. Well, it's just, you know, you can't help it if it's a major happening. You gotta talk about it. It's like we're sitting around the water cooler having a visit about these things. As you know, if you listen to any of our roundtables or Daily Nationalist shows that I'm on, with Britain, Britain, I was pro Liz Truss all the way. And for obvious reasons, because it would be so funny, because she's so incredibly stupid. And that has really played out. As I just find it hilarious. She's been in there like, what, maybe a month. And they've already, like, she almost collapsed the economy with her sheer incompetence. And she surrounded herself. You know, it's like, this is the difference between somebody that's stupid and somebody that's ignorant. You could put an ignorant person in that position, and you'd probably be all right. Why? Because they would probably go out and realize they're ignorant about these things, and they'd go find a way to hire the best and brightest people to actually manage these different things, like the economy and things such as that. But you see, a stupid person doesn't have that humility. A stupid person lacks humility. That's what separates an ignorant person from a stupid person. We're all ignorant about something. I'm ignorant about a lot of things. But you see, I'm not stupid, because if somebody comes at me and says, hey, so, you know, I don't know, like, you know, I don't know, if I sat down with Dr. Johnson and he was like, you know, so, Dan, what's your opinion on, I don't know, this this obscure Russian figure from the 1600s, I would just be like, man, I don't know. I don't know. You tell me. I don't even know who that is. I know I'm ignorant about it. I know I'm ignorant about it. I don't have any kind of prideful problem acknowledging that fact. But you see, a stupid person doesn't do that. And a stupid person sit there and make an idiot, a fool out of themselves, trying to act like they know what the hell they're talking about. See, a stupid person has pride. That is pride. I'm not preaching early, but that's where people get all mixed up because the Bible talks about pride. And they're like, they think that means the Bible means you're supposed to go around and be ashamed of yourself. No, that's not what it's talking about. It's not that kind of pride. It's the kind of pride to where you don't know about something, but you're so prideful you can't say, well, I don't know. People ask me stuff all the time. I don't know. I don't know. It's not my area of expertise. I don't know. Ask somebody that does know, because it ain't me. See, a stupid person doesn't do that. And here you have a classic example of Liz Truss. And this is why I was all for Liz Truss becoming the prime minister of once Great Britain, because she's so breathtakingly stupid that I knew it was going to be funny. She's in there for like a couple of weeks and announces her economic policy, because again, she's not ignorant. An ignorant person would hire the best and brightest so, you know, they could like manage these things and they could go around and just do what they could do. But a stupid person is not going to do that. And because Liz Truss is fundamentally a moron, she hires other morons. She hires other morons. And she's in there like a couple of weeks, announces like a small part of an economic plan. And it's so bad that their central bank had to like inject itself, had to like interfere in step in to keep basically their currency from collapsing. It was that bad. She was there like 2 weeks and you already got people writing articles talking about her government's done. It's 2 weeks. 2 weeks, and there's always already talk about, you know, this government here, her government's going to fall apart. There's no way the Tories can bring anybody this incredibly stupid. But yes, they can. Of course, as I was pro Liz Truss getting in there, I'm pro Liz Truss staying in there. All of these naysayers talking about running Liz Truss out of office and talking about her government should be dissolved and they should have. What's the point of that? What's the point? You had your stupid Tory election. I asked Finn this a while back. I'm like, because I don't know. You know, I'm. Again, it's an example. I'm ignorant. I don't know. I mean, I have a rough idea of how British politics works, British elections work. I understand the more or less the fundamentals, but I don't understand the details and the ins and outs. How breathtakingly bad is the Labour Party when the Tories have control, the supposed quote-unquote Conservative Party has control, and they're this awful? I can because we have the Republicans here, which are awful, but the Democrats are really, really awful. So I guess I get some of that. But the Tories are so breathtakingly horrible. How bad could the Labour Party must really be that the people still aren't willing? I don't know. Apparently this Liz Truss, this economic plan of Liz Truss was some kind of thing where she was trying to like channel. She kind of apparently, because she's a moron, she fancies herself as like a modern day Margaret Thatcher. You always got to have something against people that like fashion themselves as being like somebody else. As somebody that can't be confident in just simply being who they are, you know. She fancies herself as a current year version of Margaret Thatcher. Because she, deep down inside, knows that she herself is just this empty vessel of stupidity. So she thinks she's like this modern. And apparently this whole economic plan was trying to kind of like copy some sort of Thatcher plan or something. And it just kind of blew up. I'm hoping that, yeah, we got to have more Liz Truss. And I'm more or less just, the stupidity has barely had a chance to begin. We got to let this thing percolate. You could, like when you're cooking, you know, you got to let it simmer. You can just throw the ingredients in there and take a taste and say, well, this tastes bad. We need to let the Liz Truss government needs to be allowed to simmer for a while. It needs to soak in the essence of stupidity. Soak in the essence of being a moron, of being a moron. Little French there, le moron. We need to let the essence of moron steep. It needs to be allowed to simmer and soak into the ingredients of the British government. The stupidity of Liz Truss and her stupid cabinet needs to simmer for a while. Don't be talking about her government is finished and she needs to be run out. Because like I said, what would the point of that be? You just had a stupid Tory election. And of course, my understanding is there's a time frame. They couldn't do that anyway. And I think it's like a year before they can have another election. But what would the point of? Who are the Tories going to run? If after the time limit's up, they're gonna dissolve the Liz Truss government. And what, they're going to have another dumb Tory election? Who are they going to put in there this time? Liz Truss was apparently the best of the best. The Tories had to offer. Who are they going to offer next time? It's just absolutely clownish. It's unbelievable. As at the time, they could just pick some random person off the street and put them in there. And it would be better than Liz Truss. That's how bad. That's what a joke the democracy and our values and all the rest of this entire system we have is. That you could literally, I'm not even being rhetorical here. You could grab a rando off the street and it would be better than Liz Truss. You could do that. But instead, you get Liz Truss. It's the same here in the U.S. I'm not just picking on Britain. We literally have an Alzheimer's patient as president. You could have a rando off the street and make him president of the U.S., and it wouldn't be worse. It would. There's just no way. It wouldn't be worse than Joe Brandon. I mean, it just wouldn't. Same thing. You could grab a rando off the street and make them prime minister of Britain. And it couldn't be worse than Liz Truss. I would argue that the odds would be in your favor that it would be better. But you see, under the democracy system and the values of who we are and a rules-based world order, blah, 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 other empty rhetoric, gibberish words, this is what we get. The best you get is Liz Truss. You get more clown. You get more clown. And the clown wears makeup and a dress in the case of Liz Truss, but it's the clown nonetheless. But fear not, Britain. As you go into war with Russia and possibly China, as you roll into World War Clown on the side of the U.S. as a sock puppet while LARPing is to still be the British Empire, you don't need to feel down. My British, y'all don't need to feel down over there in Britain because you will be led into World War Clown at the forefront. The charge will be being led by the likes of Liz Truss as you follow along with the commands of the president of the U.S., Joe Brandon, the Alzheimer's patient. Don't worry. Don't worry. It's all going to be fine. It's all going to turn out well. We're going to go ahead and wrap up on that one. We're going to get into the Christian-specific segment. I have this sneaking suspicion, psychic, a little bit psychic here, that the Christian-specific segment could go a little long today. So we're going to go ahead and get off into the Christian-specific segment. If you're a new listener, you might be thinking, I don't want to hear none of that Jesus stuff. This ain't like what you're expecting. I encourage you to listen in. It's a fun discussion. Trust me. Take me at my word when I say it's not like anything you can go down to any church and get anywhere. Trust me, it'll be different than that. But regardless, you've been warned, whether you choose to join in or not, you've been warned. And that's where we're going. So you know what to do. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon here at the Parish of the Patriots. Unsurprisingly, the MCC has, for all practical purposes, abandoned the Old Testament. They might as well not even have it in there. They pretty much leave it alone. And I suppose it's understandable, considering the state of it and whatnot. Now, of course, we are Christian believers, and as understandable, we will often focus on the New Testament. But there's so much to learn. There's so much to learn from the Old. The reason they're both there together in the Bible is because they are connected. I try to personally, and I just say this in case you want to do the same. Now, I'm generally reading two books out of the Bible at a time, and like one day I'll read, say, a chapter from whatever book I'm reading in the New Testament, and the next day I'll read a chapter from whatever book I'm reading in the Old Testament. And then that way I can kind of split my Bible reading time equally between the two. Now, of course, in the Old Testament, a lot of it's historical, and people think, well, then that's irrelevant to my day-to-day life as a Christian believer in the world I observe around me. But it's actually the complete opposite. I mean, it's like if you were aware of history, you know, fairly recent history is in like in the past 100 years. If you're aware of the patterns of history within the past 100 years, you're more well-informed about the world around you than the vast majority of people, quite frankly, wandering around like NPCs and completely have no clue of what's going on around them now, because they have no connection or clue of what has happened in the past, even as most recently as 50, 60, 70, 80, 100 years ago. Well, by extension, the same thing holds true on a longer-term basis. If you understand biblical history, and, you know, in the Old Testament contains so much of it, you could really understand, like, the pattern, the long road that humanity, that mankind has been on. And you see these patterns emerge and the same things kind of, you know, more or less happening over and over again. As an example of this today, I thought we'd talk about going all the way back to the book of Genesis and the story of the fall of Adam and Eve eating the fruit in the garden and whatnot. And you're sitting there going, we've all heard this story since we were in Sunday school. And once again, this just highlights how you can read some of the same stuff again. You shouldn't skip over and dismiss stuff and say, well, I already know that story. Because you can always find something else, a little tidbit. And today I thought I was thinking about earlier during the week, and I was moved to share it with you. And that is in the short little bit we're going to read about Adam and Eve and the whole incident in the Garden of Eden, which started this chain of events. How we can, as we're going all the way back to the first man and the first woman, going all the way back to there, how we can look at the nature. If you mean, because a copy, we're all distant copies from the first man and woman. If you go back to, say, Abraham, well, he was so much closer to the original that everybody was copied from, which would be Adam. We're distant, distant copies. So we're genetically kind of faded, I believe. So I believe we're so genetically faded from that because we're a copy of a copy of a copy of a copy and so on and so forth. It's interesting. I'm kind of getting off on tangent. We're going to reel it back in to the subject matter. But I find it interesting because lineage and where you come from, genealogy, that's what I was trying to say, is so important in the Old Testament. If you look at, in the Bible itself, you can look at the beginning of the gospel, and Jesus' lineage is, you know, as far as from a human perspective, is laid out all the way from Jesus to Abraham. It's there for a reason. It shows how he was directly related to both David and ultimately to Abraham. And since we can also look in the Old Testament and see Abraham's lineage all the way back to the first man, the point here being that whether it's Old or New Testament, you get this lineage all the way. Essentially, you can trace their lineage all the way from Adam to who this important figure was. Is an amazing thing. We've lost that now. I can't sit here and trace my lineage all the way back to Adam. I don't have the way to do that. We've gotten so far from the original. But here's the thing: no matter how distant a copy is from the original, it's still going to hold certain traits of the original. They can become faded and not as prominent as the original was. But they're still going to hold traits from the original. Those traits are still going to hold true. And that's why if you look at Adam and Eve, like we're fixing to do, and we look at this, and I think we can kind of learn something about human nature, about the nature of man and woman is illustrated in this story. And bear with me. I think this will be interesting. So we're going to look at Genesis chapter 3. We're going to start with verses 4 through 6. We're jumping right in here. And the serpent said unto the woman, ye shall not surely die. Because he said, hey, you know, what about this fruit? And the woman is like, well, God said we'll die if we eat it. And the serpent said unto the woman, ye shall not surely die. For God doth know that in the day ye eat thereof, then your eyes shall be opened, and ye shall be as gods, knowing good and evil. And when the woman saw that the tree was good for fruit, and it was pleasant to the eyes, and a tree to be desired to make one wise, she took of the fruit thereof, and did eat, and gave also unto her husband with her, and he did eat. We're going to come on back to this. I want to jump forward to verses 9 through 13, though, for just a minute. And then we're going to come back because we're mostly going to focus on this that we just read. So we jump over here to verse 9. And the Lord God called unto Adam and said unto him, where art thou? And he said, I heard thy voice in the garden, and I was afraid because I was naked and hid myself. And he said, who told thee that thou wast naked? Hast thou eaten of the tree whereof I commanded thee that thou shouldest not eat? And the man said, the woman whom thou gavest to be with me, she gave me of the tree, and I did eat. And the Lord said unto the woman, what is this that thou hast done? And the woman said, the serpent beguiled me, and I did eat. Now, like I say, going back, depending on how old you are, going back to when you were a kid in Sunday school, you've probably read this story, you know, a gajillion times. But again, I think we can pick up stuff and learn something new and interesting. As you read this, as we go through this, we're going to kind of just ease through it now. We're going to go back through it. I find it very illustrative of the nature of man. And woman, what kind of like, and by nature, I mean kind of our default settings. And I do believe to a certain extent, we can overcome the default settings, but we have to be aware of it. And that's why it's important to understand, to know. It's not something just to point out and complain about. But if we're aware of that, it's in our nature to kind of have these faults, then we can be aware of them. For instance, if you understand that it's in your nature, for whatever reason, it's in your nature to have a problem with alcohol, you can avoid drinking. And, you know, you're going to do that. It's a wise decision. You know, but if you understand your default setting is you can't handle your booze, you ought to stay away from the booze. It's something you can overcome because you realize it's there. I believe by understanding kind of our base nature as human beings, if we understand some of this stuff, then we can be aware of it. And we'll get into that. I think we'll delve off into that just a little more. So I want to back up and we'll start going back through this. Because serpent says unto the woman, and now this is interesting because the serpent knows to go to the woman first. He knows, the serpent ain't even worried about Adam. He ain't even worried about the man. So he just goes straight to the woman. Where the woman goes, the man will follow. And the serpent already knows this. Satan already knows this. He knows that all he's got to do is get the woman to go along with it. And this doofus over here will just play along like whatever. Now you have to keep in mind, Adam and Eve were walking around like conversing with the Lord God himself. As we've already read, after this happened, God walks in and says, Adam, where are you? Come here. God already knows where he's at. He's asking him, where are you at right now? What are you doing? And well, here's where I'm at right now, Lord. I was afraid of you because I knew I was naked. These people are conversing with God himself. And yet, all Satan has to do is get the woman. Don't even worry about the man. Get the woman to go along with it. The serpent said unto the woman, ye shall not surely die, for God doth know that in the day ye eat thereof, then your eyes shall be opened, and ye shall be as gods, knowing good and evil. Now, this really, he's choosing his words carefully. He knows what it is that's going to be the most appealing. It's kind of like if somebody's trying to sell you something, they're going to figure out what points you're going to be interested in. And that's what they're going to try to sell you on. They're going to try to sell you on the things that you were interested in. Like if you're looking at a new car, and you know, that salesman will be conversing with you as you're walking out here to look at the cars, because he's trying to figure out what's important to you. Is it safety? Because if it's safety, then he's going to go on about, he's not going to talk to you about the horsepower in the engine. He's going to talk to you about how many airbags it has and the crash rating of the vehicle and whatnot. If you're a guy and you're like, man, I want something with a standard transmission that goes fast, he ain't going to sit there and talk to you about it. It's got great, attaching points for your child's safety seat, because he's already figured out that's not what you're interested in. Satan goes straight for what the woman is interested in. And the man is like an NPC. Adam here is like a background character. Now, it amazes me that Adam's here through all of this. And not to get off on something else, you know, I don't know if you've heard of the Mandela effect, but I could have swore that originally in the story, Adam was off somewhere and she went around and brought him around later to eat of the fruit. But it says here, Adam was with her, and this makes it worse. Adam is here through the whole thing. He's just sitting there like a lump on a log, just like, okay, whatever. I'm going to just... He's silent. He's not even speaking up. So the serpent goes straight to the woman, and he knows exactly what to sell her on. Your eyes shall be opened, knowing good and evil. Knowing good and evil. But here's the line I think that was most appealing to the woman and gets to the nature of the female nature. And ye shall be as gods. You shall be as God. You're going to be like God. You're going to be as a God. I think this was, I think as soon as the serpent peeled that line off, the woman was sold. She was ready. Just whatever. You will be as gods. You're going to be like gods. And I think this was the selling point. And bear with me through all of this, because we're hitting on the nature of women. First, and it's not just a woman bashing thing. So bear with me. What does it mean to be as gods? Satan is selling this to her, and I believe the money shot line here was to be as gods. What is, if you think of to be as gods, I mean, what would be like the main feature of that would occur to you? What would be the thing that would say, yeah, you're as gods? It would be to be worshipped, wouldn't it? I mean, gods are worshipped. If a quote unquote, and we're using small g here, if a small g god is not worshipped, then it doesn't exist. I mean, in some multi-theistic societies and cultures that have multiple gods in them, in their culture, they'll say, like, if a god gets forgotten and is no longer worshipped, they cease to exist. What keeps them existing is people worshiping them. So in these cultures, it says that all these different gods simply exist because people are worshiping them. If they're forgotten, nobody worships them anymore. Their altars and their shrines go away. They cease to exist. So it highlights the central thing about being as gods is to be worshipped. And this, I believe, was the selling point for women. And I think we can see this in the female nature around us today, this desire to be worshipped. There's desire to be worshipped, this to be fixated upon. Because you have to think, worshiping doesn't mean, oh, you're my God. I mean, obviously it can, but it doesn't have to simply be, oh, you know, bowing down and saying, oh, you're my God and I worship you. You're so wonderful. We're going to kind of, and there's no way I can highlight this without kind of getting into adult content. Okay. So like if you have your kids listening, depending on their age, you may want to hold up a minute, but we got to do this to make the point. If you're a man and you're sitting around looking at porn and masturbating. So I told you we got to get to adult content, and I'm as uncomfortable talking about this as you are here, and bear with me because it is important here. You sitting there for, say, 30 minutes, and you're staring at these images or videos or whatever the hell you're looking at of these women, of this woman, and you're sitting there. Where's your mind? You were in a trance. You have submitted yourself. You have literally submitted yourself to an image. In the Bible, it talks about idolatry. You know, people bowing down before an image. You are literally bowing down before an image. Your mind is nowhere near looking for the Lord or thinking about important things or life or even thinking about what you're cooking for supper tonight. Your mind is on one thing. You have bowed down and given all of your mind over to this image while you're sitting there fapping. I'm not trying to be crude or vulgar. This has to be said to understand the point. You are bowing down to an image. You are literally committing idolatry when you're staring at this porn, fapping. And the woman, and people say, well, why do women do porn? It's so degrading. Because she's being worshipped. They sit there and say, oh, it's so, you know, people come along and say, oh, it's so degrading for the woman. And it, well, obviously, though, they do it for a reason. Because the idea that there are thousands, tens of thousands of guys out there basically bowing down to her image, it appeals to this very nature of being as gods. All the way down to, I mean, you can take this to the most simplistic form. Why do women insist on wearing the, as I call them, the look at me pants? You know, you could wear like regular pants, but no, they insist no matter where they're going, they have to wear the look at me pants. You know what I'm talking about? Them skin tight yoga pants. Why? Because this inert design, it can't be because they're comfortable. It's not, nothing that tight is comfortable. So why? It's this desire to have men look at them. And they'll sit there and say, quit looking at me. I mean, guys, I went there and these guys were looking at me. Well, of course, they can see every outline. I mean, you might as well be walking around naked. It's the desire to be looked upon. It's the desire to be worshipped, to be as gods. I think it really gets to that nature. We can carry on with, continue to carry on with this logic. You see some video and some woman is being interviewed and she says, oh, I made this many millions of dollars last year on my OnlyFans. She's not only being worshipped, she's getting offerings up to millions of dollars collectively in a year. Guys bowing down and worshiping an image and giving her money. They're paying tithes. It is literally idolatry. If you're following some skank on OnlyFans and giving her money so you can stare at her image and focus on it and beat off to it, you are literally committing idolatry. That may be hard to hear, but it is the truth. And people wonder, like there's all this billions of dollars in the porn industry, and yet you can access any kind of, you can access unlimited porn for absolutely free. Does that make economic sense to you? People say, well, it's about the money. How is it about the money? They spend this money to produce this crap, and yet you can look at any of it for free. I mean, yeah, there are pay sites, but you can basically, if you want to look at porn, you can look at porn for free. Why is that? There ain't nothing in the U.S. that's free, period. Everything, you got to pay for everything. There ain't nothing. There ain't nothing. You ain't getting nothing for free. If they could figure out a way to charge you for the air you breathe, they would do it. And yet, you get access to porn absolutely free. Why? Because you're committing idolatry, and the more people bowing down before him in image and committing idolatry, the better, because this is a satanic agenda. It makes sense, right? Those who aren't believers, this doesn't make sense to them. If you ask them and you said, hey, how come they give you all of this porn? I mean, what are they getting out of that? Because you're bowing down before an image. You're literally committing idolatry. I believe this base desire to be essentially worshipped, it explains so many actions you see that women commit. Now, remember, I said at the beginning, if you're aware of these things, you can kind of keep them in check. You read letters, for instance, that the apostles were writing. And, you know, it would be addressed to, you know, obviously fondly to the lady and her household. We're told even among Jesus and his disciples, they had women that helped them out and helped, you know, cook for them and do things for them. And like I say, in some of the letters, you know, it's obviously like this woman, her household, and it'll talk about, you know, these women that helped them out of these situations and during these situations, you know, so obviously, you know, they were doing the right thing. I won't just be straight up like, all women are horrible and evil. But if you're aware of these base things, you can overcome them. You can overcome them. Going back, because I just do. I think that you can explain so much of what you see in the world today right here. You can be as gods, which would be, you'd be worshipped. That's why you see all of this. You see all this behavior. I talked about, And we're fixing to flip back on the other side here and talk about what we can learn about men's nature from this now. But I mentioned the look at me pants, and this is kind of relevant, but kind of irrelevant. I saw an article sometime back, a couple, three, 4 weeks ago. I don't know. Time flies by. But, you know, it said that, you know, because I said, why do women want to wear those skin tight yoga pant things except to be looked at? And essentially the idea deep down in their nature of wanting to be worshipped, wanting men to be looking at them like that. And kind of as a point to that, because they're not comfortable. You know, women lie. I wear these because they're so comfortable. Ain't no way. Bitch, ain't no way something that tight is comfortable, okay? I've wore blue jeans that were getting a little too small because I put a little weight on, and they were anything except comfortable. Anyway, I read an article sometime back, and these plastic surgeons were saying they were doing a record number, and I'm probably not going to get the term right, and I'm too lazy to look it up, but they're doing a record number of basically labia surgeries. Again, I'm not trying to be vulgar. This was an actual news article. They're doing a record number of labia surgeries because all these women insist on wearing the look at me pants, but some of them, you know, they're walking around like with the Grand Canyon hanging out there. You don't get no talks like this. You can go to any church in your town. You ain't going to get no conversation like this. You got to come to the parish of the Patriots for this. They walking around, forget camel toe. They walking around like the Grand Canyon out there, like the Paladuro Canyon out there. And so instead of just saying, wow, maybe the look at me pants aren't for me. Maybe I'll just wear my sweats today. No, they're spending tens of thousands of dollars to get their coochie operated on, so that it looks better in the look at me pants, which they're wearing totally because they're comfortable, not because they want men staring at them. Totally not because of that. Spend $20,000 getting their coochie reshaped so it'll look better in the look at me pants that they're wearing, totally not because they want men looking at them. Circling back. Now, you got the serpent here. In his little speech, you know, hey, and he's like, oh, no. So you're going to be like gods, and y'all going to know the difference between good and evil and right and wrong and all of this. One of the things that struck me, Satan's lies are always, they just, it's kind of like he uses the same playbook. He uses the same playbook. He kind of puts a little different spice to it, but it's the same recipe. And why shouldn't he? It works. I mean, you know, if it ain't broke, why fix it? You know, he uses the same thing. This whole thing where he's giving this spiel about, oh, no, y'all aren't going to die. It's going to be great because you're going to understand the difference. You're going to be like gods because you're going to understand the difference between good and evil and all of that. It sounds a whole lot like all of this, quote unquote, like liberation. You know, we look at our modern clown society, and we've made all of this, say in the past 100 years, we've made all of these grand steps in liberation, right? Women have become liberated. You know, they're so liberated. They have the vote now, and they're now they're in the workplace. It's so much better, isn't it? Oh, wait, no, it's not. Their lives are worse. They told the black people, we're going to make your lives better with all this civil rights legislation and marching, and you're going to have true equality. And their lives are in worse shape in this country now than they've ever been in the history of the country, including slavery. Yes, I said it. Including slavery. Oh, how can you say, look, you out there working on the plantation, that's a whole lot better than walking down the street and getting gunned down in a drive-by. Oh, it's going to be so much better once you get liberated, once you eat at the tree. It's going to be better. And as always, it's a lie. It amazes me that through this whole interaction, Adam's sitting there just like a bump on a log. And once the woman sold on it, and obviously Satan made the right call. Once the woman sold on it, he, sure. Now, this is amazing in the sense that, as I said before, this guy was walking around like having conversations with God, literally. And yet, as soon as the woman says, here, eat this. I mean, what we're not given here is she didn't have to sell him on it. She didn't have to give him a long line and convince him to do it. It's just, okay. Here, eat the fruit. Okay. Yesterday, God said not to do that.
But okay, baby, whatever you say.
When God confronts them, what does Adam say? The woman you gave me, God. Now, I've pointed out whenever we've talked about this before, his first reaction was to blame the woman instead of taking responsibility himself. But what's worse than this is he's blaming God. This is the sin here, because blaming the woman to a certain extent is accurate, although it leaves out the fact that he was sitting there saying nothing and acting like a rock there on the ground. Just a background character, has nothing, as if it has nothing to do with him. But the real sin here is he blames God. Did you eat of the fruit, Adam? You see, Lord, the woman that you gave me, like, it's God's fault. This is really, I think, the highlighted sin on Adam's part here. And of course, the woman's like, the serpent beguiled me. I didn't give my consent, but the serpent beguiled me, Lord. Now, this whole thing with men sitting there, like I say, this speaks to the nature of men. You go all the way back to the original. What Adam, he's just standing there, just whatever, just go along with it. And that we can learn from this. This is, when it comes to women, this is our nature. I mean, we're supposed to be, the man is supposed to be over the woman. That's the way this works. Because why? Because if you just leave it to your own nature, apparently you're just going to go along with whatever these women want. So you got to make the effort to overcome that. Many such cases, we're gonna touch on a few of these to kind of make a point, because it has this disastrous consequences. We all know from reading the prophets and that the downfall of the nation of Israel comes down to what? All of this worship of false gods. And all these different altars being built for false gods. Where does that end? But if you trace it back, you really go back to Solomon on this. And Solomon, for whatever reason, gets a lot of good press in the Christian community. But it's kind of undeserved. Solomon had like, you know, he was like the most, you know, splendid, you know, had the most, luxury, opulence of any king of Israel. And he had like beyond a harem. He had hundreds, literally hundreds of wives. And this guy was, drowning in it. He had access to all the sex any guy could ever want is an understatement. And God didn't care about that. God didn't care about, you know, how many wives the king had. He didn't care. What God did care about, he says, look, can't be marrying these, we can't be bringing in. You got all these queens, concubines, whatever the hell else. You got all these women, and that's fine, whatever. But you can't bring in these foreign women. You can't marry into these foreign women. You're going to bring these foreign women in. And Because if you marry into them, you're going to bring their gods with them. You're going to bring these foreign women in. You, by extension, they're bringing their gods, their false gods with them. And so you can't do that. Now you got this guy, Solomon, with access to more different coochie than any man could ever, even in his wildest fantasies, more than he could realistically do with. And what does he do? The one thing God says, no, don't do that. Don't eat of the fruit of the garden. Don't marry. You can have, I don't care that you have 300 different wives of different ages and from the nation of the different tribes of Israel. I'm cool with that. Just don't do this. But I got to go get some of this strange, I don't know, whatever, foreign women and bring them in. The exact same thing God said. And that's where it started, because just as God warned, he brought these foreign women in. They, of course, brought their gods with them because that's what they, their people worship. And then they say, honey, I need to set up an altar for my gods because, oh my gosh, like we always like worship, you know, Moloch or whatever the hell.
Okay, go ahead and set up your altar for Moloch.
Time and time again. Samson, you all know the story of Samson. And that skank he was running around with. You got this? We're not reading the story. You're probably familiar. Go look up the story. If you're not familiar, everybody knows the story. At least you know the gist of the story. This guy's superhuman strength. And this is a reflection. You go, the closer you get to the original man, the more unlike us they were physically. I mean, this guy like had this ridiculous amount of strength. Now, I don't personally believe like the hair, you know, because I mean his strength came from his hair not being, you know, not having his hair cut. You know, that represents, in my opinion, that represents his commitment to God. You know, I mean, his strength didn't literally come from the hair on his head. The hair on his head represented his commitment to God first and foremost. And the guy had superhuman strength. He could they could basically bring an army of dudes against him, and he could kill them all by himself. The guy just literally had superhuman strength. And you got this woman, and she's just playing him. She's just playing him. If you really loved me, you would tell me that. It's like you're going around killing these Philistines, and now you got to lay up with this Philistine. You got to lay up with this Philistine bitch. And when she like, you, if you really loved me, you'd tell me the source of your strength. And he'd like lie to her, you know, like gaming her. He'd like tell her, well, it's if you do this, my strength will be gone. And he'd wake up the next day and she's doing it. And he'd bust loose and, you know, kill all the dudes that were trying to kill him. It's in his face what she's doing. This isn't exactly a super subtle plan she had here. You would think the first time he'd be like, well, I'm done with you. You obviously trying to game me and get me killed. Nope. He just keeps going back because it's so good. He goes back and finally he tells her. And she cuts his hair. Now, again, I don't believe like the source of his strength was literally from his hair, because he made the same mistake. The same damn mistake. She cut. It represented a severing of his commitment to God. In other words, he ultimately put this woman, who had no real interest in him, above, he wound up putting her above and before his commitment to God, and his strength was taken from them. And he was obviously tortured, his eyes gouged out, taken into captivity, and you know the rest of the story. But what we highlight here is in his face, and still the same exact mistake. He just went along with her, even though it's just obvious what she was doing. And he still went along with it. Same thing. Solomon had to have these foreign wives. This ultimately led to the widespread worshiping of false gods, which ultimately led to the destruction of the entire nation of Israel. Why?
Because I got to have it. I got my wife number 684. She needs her altar to Moloch, you know, because you know, that's what her people worship. So I gotta go ahead and give it to her.
What do you call that? You can't call it simping, because he was actually having sex with them. I don't know. It tells us, though, and we got to wrap up here, but it tells us that it's in men's nature to essentially go along with whatever women want to do. There it is. It's laid out. That tells us, you know, so, and again, the point is you can overcome. It's not, when you say it's in our base nature, it's not to say it can't be overcome. It's just, think of it as a strong tendency that, like, if left unchecked, this is where you will go. This will be the default setting you're going to wind up finding yourself at. If you're aware that this is going to be your tendency. By your very nature, you're going to have the tendency to want to do that. If you become aware of that, you can be on guard against it, and you can work actively to overcome it, whether we're talking about in the nature of women or in the nature of men. If you're aware of that, you can work to overcome that nature. If you're aware that just left on your own, you just roll with the flow, you're going to wind up going along with some of the most ridiculous crap that a woman can dream up, because that's apparently your base nature. We learn this from the Bible. We learn this by going through the Old Testament all the way back to the first man who stood there while she's having this conversation, never spoke up and said, we really ought not do this. We learn this. So when you understand it, and like I said, we got to wrap up. But if you the point here is, if you understand these things, then you can be on your guard against it. Then you can be on your guard that you don't fall back and just go with the flow and wind up going with the default setting, which ultimately brings destruction. You're aware of these things, and you can work to overcome them. And you can work to, you know, and ultimately have a more spiritually fulfilling life. We're going to get up out of here. On that note, hopefully you got. I think it's an interesting thing to think about. You can just keep going with this. There's more stuff I could have got into, but we got to get on. We got to go ahead and wrap it up. And I'm glad y'all joined us this week. Always glad to get the congregation together. Thank you again, those of you who have thrown a little something in the offering plate. It means a lot to me. Makes a huge difference. I really, really do appreciate it. As always, I always remind everybody, you can catch me on Fridays with the Daily Nationalist with Sven Longshanks. We always have kind of a lighthearted, fun discussion. It's a shorter show, so it's something worth checking out. You can check out on your lunch hour, on your drive home, or whatever. So it's worth checking that out. And, of course, it's always worth coming back and checking us out next week for the Parish of the Patriots.